Hour number two, Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. He's Big Joe Dubin. I'm Chase McCabe. Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier, back at the studio on the ones and twos. Let's say hello now to ESPN NFL analyst and Innsworth football coach Tim Hasselbeck, who joins us. Tim, what's up?
What's up? How are you guys?
We're doing fantastic. We're live over here at the Putting Zone today on Citco Drive. And let me tell you, man, it's pretty cool. Some of the – I don't know how much of a golfer you are, but – It's pretty neat, and it's not just your putt-putt golf either, so it's pretty cool.
What do you mean you don't know what kind of golf are you profiling me a little bit there? What do you mean? Like most quarterbacks?
No, I you know, look, I know we've been best friends for a long time, but we've never played golf together, so I don't know. I don't know what your skill level is.
I mean, let's be real. Like most, like, quarterbacks, kickers, punters are good golfers, right? Like, which would be crazy. Like, I've read stuff to be like an amazing golfer. Or, you know, like, I'm just still learning if that's the case. I don't know why. Like, it was just this. I almost felt like it was disrespectful of the joke. Didn't you say it was a little disrespectful? A little bit like how he said it? Like,
absolutely, yeah, it is. I did mean like it that way. That's for sure.
I'm not an athlete, you are, but, you know, there's this golf guy. You know? Expect that out of you, Chase.
I know. I apologize, Tim. I that was it. Didn't it came off the wrong way?
It did. Yeah,
it definitely did. So, let's.
Chase is just mad, Tim, that Panda Express didn't franchise tag Chase today, and that's a problem.
No, I'm a little upset over that, but that's okay.
If somebody did franchise tag you, would be the franchise? What would be the franchise that tagged you? What would it be? Would Panda Express be the one, or is there someone
me?
Else? Yeah.
No, me would be Coca-Cola. They don't want to lose me.
Right. What about mine would be Jose Cuervo Tequila. They would tag me in a heartbeat.
That was aggressive.
Toss, stay so slim.
Wow.
Right.
I know. We were just talking about an article that on ESPN.com about the best fits for the top 50 free agents that they have out there from Matt Bowen. And a guy that pops up that really caught our attention was Alec Pierce, the wide receiver. He has the Titans as the best fit for him, leaving the Indianapolis Colts. I love Alec Pierce. He had the league best 21.3 yards a catch. I think Cam Ward needs a target like that. Do you think that Alec Pierce would be a good fit here in Tennessee?
I do. I mean, mainly just because I think he's a really good player, and I think receiver's a position of need. You know, anytime you can get these big guys with amazing catch radiuses, you know, that do a good job of tracking the ball down the field, I think there's a ton of value in that because – you know, while you can say, like, hey, receiver's a position in need, there's also skill sets within playing the position. So I definitely think it fits. I think he has a skill set that would make sense. And just like I think there are a lot of things in that article that Matt Bowen put together that I think we're good. Like, I think that Trey Hendrickson ending up at the Colts. Like, I actually think that's it's an amazing fit and probably good value for them. I think you have Mike Evans going to the Bills. Like, to me, Mike Evans to the Bills is, you know, much like the Alec Pierce conversation, only, you know, obviously a much older player, different stage of his career. Does he go there in hopes of winning a Super Bowl? Like, to me, he could have a Devontae Adams type of impact, a guy that, you know, throughout his career has caught touchdown passes, you know, done an amazing job of it, kind of a double-digit touchdown guy, was not this past year. But you look at Devontae Adams, I think he caught 14. You know, once he was paired with Matthew Stafford. So, I think Matt Bowen does an excellent job. I think it's a good fit. And I think Pierce here in Tennessee would be a great fit.
You know, we've had a big conversation on Tony Pollard. Do you, even though he's had 2,000-yard seasons since he's been in Tennessee, do you move off of him and move off of that contract and basically spend the same amount of money but go find, you know, someone that's younger – And, you know, Kenneth Walker's name comes up. Breece Hall's name comes up. Now, who knows if they're truly going to be available. But when you look at the running back position, you know, do you think that, you know, that's a position that should still have some value? Or are you in the camp that, hey, you know, address that when you get done with all the other priorities? But Pollard's solid. If you're, you know, if you keep him, you're good. Or if you go out and get somebody else, you're going to be just fine, because that's a position that's easily replaced.
Yeah, I don't feel like the running back position in Tennessee is one that's going to be high on the priority list. And I think what's going on with guys like Breece Hall and what's going on with Kenneth Walker is prime example of that. I mean, the guy just had a great postseason, was a Super Bowl MVP, and his own team is most likely going to be like, honestly, like, we're okay. And the guy that had beat him out for much of the year, you know, tore his ACL, you know, late this season. So I look, when you have an elite level back, Bijan Robinson, Saquon Barkley, guys like that, it's one thing. But when you're talking about, all right, I just need starter level production, a guy that can be a 1,000-yard rusher, I don't think it's as difficult to find. Now, it doesn't mean you can't have, you know, kind of a miss on it, which is why I think I would just, you know, probably let it ride with Pollard. You know, he's been a good back. You know, it probably ends up still being a committee thing. You can draft somebody in later rounds, maybe late in the free agency market at the running back position. You find improvement. But it would definitely not be an area of priority for me.
Talking to Tim Hasselbeck on the Chase and Big Joe Show. Tim, you know, one thing is getting the contract. But another thing, I'm sure you play with a lot of guys who sign massive contracts, and now becomes the middle aspect of, can you live up to that? And the reason I bring that up, I did a thing with Barry Zito recently. He talked about when he signed a 7-year, $118 million contract with the San Francisco Giants. Immediately, the next headline he read was, can he live up to it? And it was just like, that's all he heard. Can he live up to it? Can he live up to it? Does it affect these guys when they come and they show up and like, all right, I got this big deal? Do you see them differently in a way of like, oh, man, the pressure's getting to them? Because I would think it would, right?
Yeah, I've definitely seen it affect guys, you know, in different ways. I've also, you know, been impressed with guys in terms of how they've handled it. You know, that's really the thing that you don't know when you sign somebody to a contract. I mean, take a look, and it's quite frankly, it's probably why Jerry Jones has negotiated the way that he has, you know, with some of his star players, just because it's like, wow, like I believe in the guy, I believe in his kind of grit, toughness, his desire to, you know, try to play up to the level of the contract, but that's a lot of money and it can change your life. And so, I think that, I always, when I was at the Giants, Michael Strahan was in like year 15 and, you know, he didn't want to come to training camp and stuff, but like the way he even played in some preseason games when I was there, I thought that's incredible. That a guy still has the approach that he still has to, you know, to making it go. And then I, you know, definitely saw other guys that was like, you know, as soon as their hamstring felt remotely tight, they were like, don't think I can practice today. Like not worth the risk. It's just one of those things. I don't think you know until you know, until the guy is in that environment and you see him face some adversity.
I get it. All right. Yesterday, the Dolphins released Tyreek Hill. I was like, I take a flyer on him here in Nashville. 99.9% of the people that texted it and called in said absolutely not. I mean, he's still got a future, right, somewhere in the league?
I think because the injury was so significant, not only did he tear his ACL, but he dislocated his knee. Mm. And for a 5'10" receiver that his game is based on speed, and then he's coming off of an injury that, look, some guys just can't come back from it. I think it's, you know, by most accounts, there wasn't nerve damage. But, you know, that's not something we really know. And so I think signing him is going to be difficult because there's just going to be a health aspect to where he is that teams aren't really going to know. And then you have a player that is, you know, he's not going to totally want a contract that's, you know, so team friendly in terms of protecting them if he's not healthy to go. So, to me, that one comes down to the health. And then once you get beyond the health, you have to start to figure out, like, okay, there have been off the field issues. There have been in the locker room issues with him. So, you know, how do you want to absorb that for a player that, you know, again, is, you know, is getting a little bit older. His game is based on speed.
Right.
And injuries like that have ended players' careers.
What, would Andy Reid be the one that could corral him?
I think so. I think Andy does an amazing job of doing that. I don't think he's ever really shied away from it. It's part of the reason he drafted him in the first place. Now, you know, if you look at what Andy has done this year, he basically has said, look, I'm putting a reset on this. I mean, so many assistant coaches gone. You know, they weren't very good. I think that, you know, he typically does a very good job of being ahead of the market in terms of when it's time to say goodbye to somebody. And so I think sometimes we say, like, we would assume that he would want him back because he was there. Maybe he doesn't feel that way. You know, I mean, maybe Andy is in a situation where he's like, look, it was good while it lasted. He was great in his prime to be able to put up with some of the headaches that he gives you in the locker room and off the field, but not now. And so I'm not 100% sure that Kansas City would be in play for him.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. You know, just on the Dolphins for a second, I mean, it's very apparent they're in rebuild mode. John Eric Sullivan was somebody that he interviewed here. You know, he's been up for jobs. I like his background. I really like Halfley's background as well. Do you think that that's a situation that if ownership allows those two guys to do what they want to do, that they can rebuild this sooner rather than later?
Whew, I mean, you better get quarterback right, because, you know, you could do a lot of really good things. But if you don't get the quarterback situation right, then it probably isn't going to matter. You know, playing in
okay,
a division.
Okay, so is Malik Willis the bridge?
I don't know that Malik Willis is going to have to settle for a bridge contract. I think that would be the thing I'm, you know, not totally sure about is, like, if the market is what people are kind of, you know, saying that it's going to be for Willis. I mean, is he not getting north of $40 million a year? And to me, that's not really a bridge quarterback.
No, it's not.
It only takes two. So, like, let's just say Miami's excited about him. Halfley was in Green Bay, liked everything about him. They won games with him, and he's like, oh, like, this can work. I know this can work. Well, then, you know, Arizona feels the same way about him. Well, like, now, like, you know, now you're – he's not a bridge quarterback. He's a starting quarterback, you know, and it's a long-term deal. You're fully committed to him. And so that's where I think this gets really interesting for Malik Willis, because I think he ends up with much closer to starter money than bridge quarterback money.
We'll have more with Tim Hasselbeck from ESPN. Coming up next, live at the Putting Zone, here today's Chase and Big Joe on 102.5 The Game.
All right, welcome back to the Chase and Big Joe Show, live at the Putting Zone, 3040 Sitco Drive, theputtingzone.com. ESPN will be here next month for an indoor competitive putting tournament, which I had no idea existed until today, but it's wonderful. Let's continue our conversation with Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, tomorrow, Gus Bradley, Brian Daboll meet the press here in Nashville. Robert Saleh said he's going to be the defensive coordinator. What is Gus Bradley's role then if they're going to call him defensive coordinator, but he's not calling plays?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot that goes into it during the week in terms of devising the plan, setting the, you know, essentially, you know, putting the game plan together, installing it to the players, all of those things. So, you know, I think that, you know, ultimately, there's a lot that goes into it during the week. Who actually ascended into the defensive play caller is just, you know, kind of one aspect of it. It's almost like, you know, there's probably an exaggeration to it, but it's like saying, all right, hey, you're a captain, and so you're going to go out to the coin toss. Like, you could make the argument that walking out to the coin toss is the least important thing you do as a captain. It's everything else that you do during the week as a captain that helps lead your team. So, you know, to me, there's a lot of responsibility when you're a head coach in the NFL, meeting with media and, you know, and dealing with players and, you know, other aspects of kind of the direction of the organization, that sometimes you just need help if you're the guy that's going to be calling the plays, you know, on Sunday, just with the actual installation of it, the, you know, the ideas in terms of, you know, maybe wrinkles that you have each and every week. And so I think Gus Bradley will be a massive asset. I think he's probably somebody that's solid trust. You know, at the same time, Salah may just, you know, enjoy calling the defenses, you know, part of, you know, maybe what he thinks gives him a competitive advantage.
Flipping from a 3-4 to Robert Salah and Gus Bradley, 11-4-3. You got Jeff Simmons and Sweat in the middle. I mean, so it's imperative, right? You got to have guys off the edge to get after the quarterback. That's the only way the 4-3 works.
Well, yeah, and, you know, the way it works now is every team is multiple now. I mean, that's just the way it works. You know, so teams that are four-down teams, a lot of times you get the third down, they become a three-down team, and then vice versa. If you're a three-down team, you know, oftentimes, you know, it's a four-down look when you get the third down. So, you know, I think I used to think it was a huge, huge deal, and that clearly is important based on, you know, the personnel that you're trying to sign and just philosophically, you know, what you're going to live in, you know, on the defensive side of the ball. But everybody is doing both. And when I say everybody, I mean everybody. And everybody's doing a good amount of both, because you kind of have to, because it just makes it so much harder for defenses to defend. So, you know, you're really talking about a first and second down defense when you talk about being a, you know, an even front or an odd front team.
I think one of the things that freaked me out was years ago, I think it was the Ravens that did that on defense. All 11 guys were standing up. I'm like, what are they doing? And I was like, what's going on here? I just thought that at the time. Now it's commonplace. But when I first saw all 11 standing up, I'm thinking, this is crazy. You were a quarterback. When you see all 11 standing up, you're probably thinking, what in the hell is about to happen?
Hey, listen, you know, a little bit of a shout out to Rex Ryan. Rex Ryan, much like his dad, you know, did some things that were wildly creative and changed football. And, you know, that's a great example. It was so much at that era of football with the quarterback, you know, identifying the front, setting the protection by the mic call, and which way they're going to slide and do all that. Well, what do you do if, you know, Haloti Ngata at, you know, the nose tackle at 315 pounds is standing right next to Ray Lewis, who's standing right next to Ed Reed, who's, I mean, that's just,
right.
That's the reality of it. And it destroyed a lot of people. And, you know, and so it's kind of interesting, because there's definitely a, you know, a lineage of, you know, on the defensive side of the ball. Obviously, it was the Bear defense with Buddy Ryan. But guys like Greg Williams, who people remember being the defense coordinator here in Tennessee, some of the creative stuff that he did, which, you know, I think also, you know, Rex was, you know, kind of off all obviously the same tree, but, you know, Rex did a lot of, and it definitely changed football. So that's what I mean about people are so on the defensive side of the ball, it's gotten very complex. And that's why three down, four down, all that stuff is great. But if you look at, like, Seattle is a pretty good example of, you know, they've just decided, look, we're going to just identify and draft better players, and we're going to, you know, we're going to rush four, play coverage, and still have a lot of success.
It's funny, Tim. One day we got a call. Somebody called in because the Titans defense was playing really bad and said, well, why don't you just use the 46 scheme the Bears had in 85 and apply it? That worked well. And I remember telling the call, I was like, I need you to go research that Bears defense of 85 and see if that works here. And they called back later and said, there was like four Hall of Famers on that. I said, yeah, that's why that 46 worked there. It's not going to work here.
Yeah, well, listen, the players matter for sure, right? Like, I mean, that's, and again, I'll just use like Seattle as the example. You know, they get Leonard Williams, they signed DeMarcus Lawrence, Ernest Jones was clearly tapped to be a guy that would play well inside. They get Nicky Memori, they draft a 6'4" corner. Like they have done a remarkable job at adding length and speed and really good players on the defensive side of the ball, which has helped them, you know, play the way that they've played.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us, ESPN NFL analyst. So kind of looking at how you used to look at things, when you would be approaching free agency, and I know they've made like the legal tampering period and all of that, and which I think is great, but when you approached it, what were things that went through your head, like what you were looking for, the process you went through that some of these guys are going to be doing over the course of the next few weeks?
I mean, like, can we be real? It's like, okay, how much money are they going to pay me? Am I going to make the team? And are they going to draft somebody in my position? I mean, those, like for most players, what they care about is, are they going to draft somebody at my position? And are they going to pay me enough money that it's unlikely that they cut me? So, like, that would cover at least 80% of the guys that are, you know, going to sign new contracts. And then, you know, beyond it, you know, the guys that are, you know, more priority free agents, you know, they start to, you know, pay a little bit more attention to other things in terms of, you know, the money will dictate a lot, the contract will dictate a lot, but, you know, do they feel like they can go have sustained success at that place to get to the next contract? So, I mean, that's, you know, that ultimately that is, you know, I think it kind of boils down to those things, right? Like, it's not much more complicated than that, you know, for players. Guys that are on the roster bubble want to make sure they're there, and guys that, you know they're going to be there want to know that they're going to be set up for the contract after that.
Tim Hasselbeck joining us here on the show.
Tim, our question of the day is, in honor of Mardi Gras and Fat Tuesday, what's the best party you've ever been to?
Best party I've ever been to?
Mm-hmm.
I think I would guess like senior week or something leaving college. You know, we did this thing like dance through the decades, you know, so it was just like a different theme each, you know, it was like 80s, 50s, 70s, you know. I think I'd have to go that route. I'm trying to think of another party.
Maybe something, one of your little New York parties up there that you got to attend?
No. I think that's either that or like when your kids have their first birthday party. How about that? That's pretty good. When your kids
that's
have
a
their
nice
first,
like, dad answer.
Birthday.
That's a great dad answer. I love that.
I mean,
yeah, maybe the next biggest party is when Ensworth wins the state championship in football.
I mean, we might act like we've been there before because we have, but just, you know, maybe we'll do that.
All right, I like that. That's a good answer.
Listen, I'm not talking about partying in high school kids, okay? We're not doing that.
I'm with you on that one. All right.
Tim, appreciate the time as always. We'll talk next Tuesday.
That was also a dad answer, a dad of two high school boys.
I understand.
See you, fellas.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate it. Tim Hasselbeck joining us here on the program, ESPN NFL analyst and also the very, very successful and responsible head coach of the Ensworth
Tigers.
And
good dad, man.
And good dad as well.
To do that, yeah.
We'll react to some of that again. We are live today at the Putting Zone and we're excited to be here and for them to have us today. It's off Sitco Drive. At
3040.
Thank you. 3040 Sitco Drive. The Putting Zone is creating the next great recreational sport, competitive putting, and it has taken off. No mini golf. It is the world's first 18-hole par 72 professional indoor putting course. And once you see it and play it, you're going to want to go back again and again. We're here until 3 o'clock today. You can come by, say hi, check it out, and register to win Preds tickets as well. It's Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game.